again, everyone. I'm Dr. Sidel Ross, and I would like to welcome you to another episode of Prescriptions in Song. As I've previously mentioned, I practice hospice and palliative medicine, so some of the work that I do involves caring for patients at the end of life. In my first episode, I shared my experience of singing for a patient during his final days of life. And I thought it would be a good idea to take a closer look at some of the more organized or more formal methods and practices that exist for offering music to patients at the end of life. To that end, in today's program, I will be discussing the practice of music thanatology, and I'll take a look at how it is used in providing symptom management in hospice care at the end of life. Today, we have a guest on our show, a music thanatologist, who will be sharing some of her knowledge and experiences with us. I would like to warmly welcome Catherine DeLong to the program. Thank you, Catherine, for being with us today.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Pleasure is all mine. So, Catherine, to begin, I'm willing to bet that the word thanatology may not be familiar to many people. Can you tell us what music thanatology is and give us a brief explanation of how it originated? How did it start?
Sure. The word thanatology derives from Greek mythology. Thanatos was the Greek god of death, and his twin brother was Hypnos. So the word thanatology, as it stands alone, means the study of death and dying. And as a music thanatologist, I play the harp and sing at the bedside of patients who are in the process of nearing the end of their life.
Thank you. So in some of the research that I've done regarding music at the end of life, the harp seems to be the musical instrument, or one of the musical instruments that's often used. Why do you think harp music in particular lends itself to healing and soothing and comfort?
This is a tradition that is thousands of years old. The tradition of using the harp to calm the nervous system. It's an amazing instrument. We have natural elements, wood, oftentimes strings made of animal intestines, metal. And with the harp, we can create a variety of frequencies. The strings vibrate a long time. And so with that, when there's a vibrating string going back and forth, and then I play another string and another string, one after another, it weaves this fabric of vibrating frequencies that is really soothing to the body.
Interesting.
Yes, music thanatologists follow the tradition. They really hold to the model of Benedictine monks from the 11th century who would stand around the bed of dying patients in their infirmary. And their mantra was care for the body, cure for the soul. And these monks at the monastery in Cluny, France, tended to a lot of people who were traveling on the highway, and it was kind of like the middle age version of Instacare. If you were traveling, you could stop at a monastery and get some care if you had health issues.
Was that so? I had no idea.
Yeah. And monks would stand around the bed and sing to patients who were winding their way towards death, and they never left a patient alone as they were actively dying. So this is kind of where we take our model. And in modern times, music thanatology has existed for about 40 years. And it developed at the same time as the modern hospice program. Yes. And also at the same time when Elizabeth Kubler-Ross was doing her work with dying people. So it's been around a while, and I'm very grateful, just so grateful for the opportunity to be of service and to be at the bedside. It is truly an honor. I can say that very simply that the music invites patients and it invites their families to be present to what's going on in that moment. It invites them to be present to what's going on inside of them and around them as well. And it helps them make meaning of that moment in time. And that's so important.
Absolutely. Absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, it can bring a sense of the sacred. It can underscore the love that they feel. It can release fear. And fear can hold people here longer than they really might want to be here.
Sure.
Yeah. So those are some of the things that I get to experience. If their nervous system is calmed by the music, that can affect the intensity of their pain. It can affect their ability to sleep. So there are many things that I would say that are positive side effects of the music.
Well, that's a great segue into my next question, because I was about to ask about some of the techniques that you use to make your dying patients and families, relatives, loved ones, more comfortable at the end of life.
Yeah. The number one thing that I do, the thing that really drives the process and the dialogue between us, is the patient's respiration. And when I enter the room, I watch the respiration. I will even count the number of cycles per minute.
Yes.
And then I play, I match the rhythm of the music to their respiration. And this offers a real subtle sense of support and companioning. And oftentimes the result is that their respiration might slow just a little bit. And that is a positive sign. Whatever happens is fine, but that's something that I see happening, and I'll notice that the music is getting slower. And that's really the patient who is I'm following them.
Okay, I was just about to ask, who is
they're not
driving the process?
Exactly. I follow them, and they're in charge.
Got it.
Yeah, and I'm sensitive to what's going on with them. If I'm playing for a patient who is has uncontrolled pain, I will play a melody that has a very small range, and they don't need very much stimulation. A little bit of music, a little bit. In terms of the range of the music, is good for someone who is in pain. I'll also play something that is perhaps stepwise, meaning a melody that goes from one note to the next, to the note right next to it, as opposed to big jumps in intervals.
Do you think you could give us an example?
Yes, I'd be happy to.
Okay, great.
Right, that's the best way to show.
Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Soothing. You were able to very clearly demonstrate what you described. simple melody. The notes are very close together. There are no significant jumps or leaps in the notes. And I felt for a moment somewhat transported. I felt my mind just going to a comforting place.
Good.
And so I guess that's the idea.
That's exactly the idea. That is our goal.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So as I read more about music thanatology, I learned about an event, so to speak, called the Music Vigil. Can you tell us what music vigils are and what they entail?
Sure. A vigil is the same thing as a music session. It's a 20 or 30 to 60 minute session with a patient and their family. Family is always welcome. And during that period of time, I'm paying close attention to the phenomenological, to what I see in front of me. Mm-hmm. And I notice the countenance of the person. Is their brow furrowed? Are they agitated? What are their body movements like? And I notice all of these things, and I also pay attention to what's happening with the family and who's agitated, who needs a chair. And because really, this is medicine for every person in the room and even for the staff.
Sure.
So I kind of suss out what's happening, and the last thing that I do before I sit down to play is wash my hands. And this is kind of a sacred moment for me where I prepare while I'm washing my hands to bring something sacred to this patient.
Absolutely.
So then, and then we begin. And usually I begin slowly, kind of gently to enter the space. And there may be some moments of silence here and there. I might play several different pieces, but no two vigils are ever the same because I'm watching the patient very carefully and adjusting what I do according to what feels needed in that moment.
Sure. Because no two patients are the same. And
exactly.
And everybody's set of circumstances around the time of death will be very different, you know, one person to another, I imagine.
Truly, truly. And with families, it's quite common that within a minute or two after I start playing, there's a release of emotion. They work so hard and spend so much time at the bedside and are under so much stress.
Mm-hmm.
And for them to be able to release what they have been carrying and to release their fear and anxiety is really important. So I am just there to witness and to hold and to create a container for what might be expressed.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for the important work that you do.
Thank you.
So you've been practicing music thanatology for a number of years, and I know that you're in the process of writing a book about your experiences as a music thanatologist. Can you share with us one or two of your most memorable experiences?
I would be happy to. It's hard to choose.
I'm sure. Yes. Sorry to put you on the spot.
No, it's hard to choose because I have rich experiences and I'm just grateful for what happens in those moments that we're together. A few months ago, I was playing for a young man from West Africa, and he had stomach cancer. When I entered the room, he smiled and was so warm in his greeting and was very available to me, and he was cognitively completely alert and oriented. So I began playing. And very soon, he's kind of staring off to the side like he's looking intently off into the distance, like at the horizon, and really just staring, which I see. I see this with patients, and it helps me understand that they're kind of going someplace. And so I finished playing, and he thanked me, and I thanked him, and then he says, "You know, I went some places. I went far away." Mm. And I just kind of waited, hoping he would speak further. And he says, "I saw tall grasses blowing in the wind. And I was in nature, and I felt free." And then he says, "I was at peace." And then tears just flowed. And he picks up the napkin on his bedside table and just holds it over his face and allows himself to weep. And it's hard to put words to what it's like to be present to that experience. But I stayed with him, and then he smiles at me. He wipes his face, smiles at me, and holds out his hand and says, "Thank you so much. This is just what I needed." He wanted to shake my hand, which I thought was really beautiful. A couple of years ago, I was playing for an elderly woman who was actively dying. It was about 9 in the morning. And her daughter had spent the night with her, and her granddaughter had just arrived. And this young woman was about 20, college student, but it was kind of like the changing of the guard. And the mother daughter comes in, and or the granddaughter, excuse me, and sits down and immediately begins engaging with her phone, which we do.
Yes.
The patient had Alzheimer's and had lived for about 10 years in the home of this girl with her parents.
Yes.
So I think, she's had all of her teenage years with her grandmother with Alzheimer's in her home. And so I'm playing along, and within about 5 minutes, I can see the patient's respiration abruptly change and become slower. And so I say to the granddaughter, I say, "You know, I'm noticing your grandmother's respiration is changing a little bit. Will you watch with me? And let's see what happens." And shortly, the grandmother ceased breathing. Very peaceful, quiet, and she was finished. And I reassured the granddaughter, and I said, "I'm going to go get the nurse, and we'll just, you know, just hang tight here." And I got the nurse, and she came back and pronounced the grandmother, said the time of death. And so I said, "Let me stay and play some more music for you." And she said, "That would be great." I say this to the granddaughter.
Yes.
The nurse goes out and is calling the daughter, who had just left. And I play for a while, and then I say, would you like me to come sit next to you? I would be happy to stay while we wait for your mother to return. And the granddaughter is a little bit weepy, and I come and sit by her, and she says, I don't know why I'm crying. She didn't like me, and I didn't like her.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. She says, she didn't like me, and I didn't like her. And I just sat there, and she continues to talk. And then she starts touching her grandmother's hand. And then she touches her shoulder and starts kind of fussing with her hair and touching the side of her face with such affection.
Oh.
And she looks at me and says, I'm trying to hold on to my malice, but it's all gone. And
it's wonderful.
I know. I think how she was freed. And freed from anger towards,
sure.
Or frustration over how unsatisfying this relationship was. But she gained such compassion for her grandmother in that very moment. And it was so sweet. And I just think for the rest of her life, she's made peace. And she's had that full circle experience of forgiving that grandmother and forgiving herself for her own hard feelings.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's hard to connect dots exactly. Well, the music did this, but the music helped. The music was part of that whole experience.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
Wholeheartedly. Wholeheartedly. And again, it's just, these are incredibly powerful experiences that you're sharing with us. So again, I would like to thank you.
Mm.
Thank you for this incredible work and for being such a gift to the world, really.
Well, you're most welcome. And the pleasure is mine and the benefit is mine. This is not purely a work of sacrifice because I get more than I give. It really is beautiful work. As you know, end-of-life work is sacred work.
Absolutely.
And I am so honored to get to hold someone's hand and create something of beauty for them in that moment.
Yes.
So often the geography of their world has become reduced and reduced and reduced.
Mm-hmm.
The size of a hospital bed. And they need beauty, and they need to know that they are worthy of something that is truly divine in this moment.
Absolutely. Catherine, I would like to thank you. Thank you for taking the time to be with us today. This has been incredibly inspirational to me.
It's a pleasure.
I certainly am. As I continue my work in the field of hospice and palliative medicine, I'm sure our listeners learned a great deal about you, the wonderful person that you are, and your profession. Please tell our listeners how they can learn more about you and the services that you offer.
I have a website that is my last name, delongharp.com. And that's a way that anyone can get in contact with me. I play for patients of visiting nurse service. their hospice arm. I play for those patients. I play for patients at Bellevue Hospital, for clients of the You Can Thrive Foundation that supports women with breast cancer.
Yes.
And I also do private vigils. And I am happy to do that in the tri-state area.
Yes. New York, New Jersey, Connecticut.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yes.
Would you be willing to do these, well, now in the setting of COVID-19, you know, everything is being done online. Would you be willing to do a vigil online, let's say outside of the tri-state area, if someone were interested?
Yes, and it's funny that you're asking that. I just had a meeting yesterday with my fellow music thanatologist, and we're saying we will now provide vigils via FaceTime, via
yes.
Zoom, because I can watch someone breathe over
sure. Yes.
the internet. And it's not what we might choose, but none of this is what we might choose.
Absolutely.
Sadly, my work is considered non-essential. So in this time, with all of this loss, I have been unable to be at the bedside. So I welcome the opportunity to be of service.
Wonderful. Well, again, thank you. And thank you for making yourself available.
Truly, I'm happy to do so.
Very good. Well, I'm Dr. Sidel Ross, and thank you all for listening. I hope you will join me for the next episode of Prescriptions and Song. Until then, please take care of yourselves and one another.